Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio, and how the tech are you? It's time for the tech news for Tuesday, March 28th, 2023. And we start off with a little bit of sad news. So last Friday, Gordon Moore passed away at the age of 94. That's a ripe old age. Now, I plan to do an episode about Moore to really go into detail about his life and contributions, but he is someone that I have talked about a lot in past episodes of Tech Stuff because he's a pretty important person in the world of tech. He's the man who first observed that semiconductor fabrication companies had followed a particular trajectory, namely that the companies were cramming twice as many components onto a square inch of silicon every 2 years or so. So if you were able to put 10,000 components on a square inch of silicon in year one, 2 years later, by year three, you're cramming 20,000 on there. By year five, that would go up to 40,000 and so on. And it gets real big real fast. Now, this observation came to be known as Moore's Law, which is funny because, you know, he was making an observation and saying that you could predict what would happen based on this observation. But he wasn't saying that there was some, you know, fundamental law that drove this. His initial observations were really more about economic factors that would fund that kind of innovation and make it necessary in order to be competitive. But later interpretations of his observation would kind of boil down to a prediction that computing processing power doubles every 2 years or so. But Moore's Law was just one of his big contributions. Another huge one is that he was a co-founder of Intel. So we'll do a full episode about him and his contributions soon. And in the meantime, fair winds and following seas, Gordon Moore. Markets Insider reports that, according to analyst Dan Ives, TikTok has a 90% chance of being banned in the U.S. if things continue as they are. Now, this follows Xiaoxi Chu, which is TikTok's CEO, appearing before Congress. Now, as I mentioned last week, I was writing and recording during his testimony, so I had to follow up on what was going on, and I couldn't watch very much of it, y'all, because it was not pretty. There was some real, you know, ethnocentric, xenophobic behavior on display in Congress, some of it really, really ugly. And there were a lot of assumptions about Chu's heritage. It seemed like everybody was assuming he's Chinese. He's not. He comes from Singapore, not China. There was also a lot of railroading where, like, no one was asking a question at one point. Like they were essentially making accusations and statements, but not asking anything. And it's kind of, like, counterproductive. I mean, if someone's there to provide testimony, you're supposed to ask them questions so that they can answer. Then you follow up. And it looked like a lot of them, the people in Congress, were kind of using it to grandstand. And, you know, a lot of TikTok folks, like a lot of users, took the ball and ran with it by creating a bunch of satirical videos pointing out how Congress was behaving. Of course, TikTok users have their own bias, obviously. So, according to Ives, the analyst, TikTok has a couple of options if it wants to avoid being obliterated. And it's pretty much what we heard a few years back when former President Donald Trump started to go after TikTok. The company can either hold an initial public offering or IPO and go public, and in the process, presumably break its connection with ByteDance, though you would have to take some real steps to make sure that happened, or it could be sold off to some other company, you know, not a Chinese company. Now, honestly, I don't know how to feel about all this. On the one hand, China very much is focused on digital espionage. Like, that's not a controversial thing to say. China's actively pursuing digital espionage in multiple venues. I don't know that TikTok's one of them necessarily. It wouldn't surprise me if it were, but you know, there's no denying China's in that business. But then so is everybody else, including the United States. It's not like China's the outlier here. You could also argue that even the private and public companies here in the U.S., the tech sector, are, when you get down to it, focused on digital espionage with regard to users. They are in the business of buying and selling personal information about people like us. No one is clean on this, in other words. Like, you can't just single out TikTok and say you are bad because you're collecting information, because that's the truth across the board. You could say everyone's bad, and that would be true. But yeah, singling out TikTok for that specific purpose doesn't hold a lot of water. Now, the national security component does complicate things further, but it also creates an opening for xenophobic ideologies to take hold, which gets pretty ugly. Like, there are elements of the rhetoric that were starting to sound a bit like McCarthyism from back in the 1950s. If you don't know what that is, you need to look up the Red Scare and educate yourself. And, you know, some of the concerns might be based in reality, but they can become exaggerated and also conflated with other things. And it can get very, very ugly very, very quickly. So the whole thing is a huge mess. And I sure as heck do not know what the best way forward is. I just feel pretty comfortable saying whatever the best way happens to be, that ain't the way we're going right now. Joseph Cox of Motherboard has a piece about the FBI's contract with a company called Team Cymru, or perhaps Cymru. It's C-Y-M-R-U. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. And the contract is to acquire what is called NetFlow data. This is kind of like a big picture view of information that's moving across networks like the internet. You can see which servers are connecting to one another, transmitting information from endpoint to endpoint. So Team Cymru is able to get this data by doing deals with internet service providers. Team Cymru offers ISPs threat detection services, and in return, the ISPs trade this data, which Team Cymru then sells to clients like the FBI, apparently. Now, the reason this is important is it marks a kind of loophole that the FBI has leaned on in order to get an eye on data transmissions without first going through the legal process to do so lawfully, right? Instead of getting a warrant, a digital warrant, they just buy the data outright. Now, NetFlow is not quite the same thing as spying on the actual information being exchanged itself. It can, however, include a lot of stuff like what URL you're visiting, so you know which websites people are going to during a given internet session. And NetFlow can definitely provide clues as to potential illegal activity. So you might be able to find which servers are associated with a hacker group, for example. But the issue is that metadata can tell us a lot about a person by itself. Like, you might think the information within a conversation is important, and it is, but the metadata about that conversation can give you a lot of clues all on its own. Now, I've mentioned this before, but there have been a lot of demonstrations showing that with just a few data points, you can really narrow down a specific internet user's identity with incredible accuracy and precision. So this practice of just buying information from companies like Team Simru, it gets into some really dangerous surveillance state territory here. If you'd like to learn more, you can visit vice.com and just read the article, "Here is the FBI's contract to buy mass internet data." The facial recognition company Clearview, which built out an enormous database of images using questionable means, mainly scraping social network platforms to gather digital photos without first getting the consent of users of those platforms, says that it has facilitated almost 1 million searchers for U.S. police. This is according to the company itself that has made that claim. They revealed this startling information in a piece for the BBC. Clearview has received some high-profile criticism in the United States, and several cities here in the U.S. outright banned their police forces from using the service. They say, do not make use of Clearview's services. Now, as I've mentioned several times in the past, facial recognition technology is far from perfect and frequently encounters issues when identifying people of color in particular. And ultimately, these are the same people who receive disproportionate scrutiny and abuse from law enforcement. Making matters worse is that it's very difficult to say which police departments have been frequent customers for Clearview because there are very few laws and regulations that require police to disclose that kind of information. So this lack of transparency creates a further gap of distrust between police and citizens. And scraping social media for data like this typically goes against the terms of services for those social networks. Facebook has come down hard on companies that have tried to scrape Facebook in order to gather data. Also, academic researchers. Facebook's really gone hard against academic researchers doing that. So essentially, companies like Meta / Facebook don't like anyone else being able to do what they are very, very definitely doing themselves. I mean, it's I don't have information on it. I cannot say with evidence that they do, but it would shock me if they are not making use of that technology that they don't want anyone else to be able to use on their platforms. Okay, with that cheerful note, let's take a quick break. We'll come back with some more tech news. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Okay, we're back. So this past weekend, an organization called the Military Cyber Professional Association, or MCPA, petitioned lawmakers to create a new branch of the U.S. military that would focus solely on digital and cyber threats. The group, which consists of folks who have worked in digital security within the military, some of them current military officials, some of them former ones, they say that one of the largest challenges that the United States faces with digital warfare in mind is that up to now, each branch of the military has its own independent methodology to fight cyber threats. And there is a unified office that can take some actions, but it's not a full branch of the military. So the MCPA is saying this creates gaps in U.S. defenses, and that if we are to actually have a real strong national security approach to cybersecurity, there needs to be a military branch specifically dedicated to cyber warfare and defense. This branch could establish best practices. It could spearhead projects to protect the United States, and it would be a fully funded branch of the military as opposed to something that could see its funding ebb and flow based upon the individual branches of the military that already exist. We've already established a new branch of the military here in the United States in the recent past, the Space Force being the most recent branch. So if this did happen, there is precedence, recent precedence. Before Space Force, it was like 72 years since the last time the U.S. had created a branch of the military. But hey, we're on a roll now, right? I mean, that's a streak. We can start creating branches for everything. Whether or not anyone actually makes a move on this to turn this proposal into something more actionable remains to be seen. There does not appear to currently be a lot of oomph behind this in Congress or in the executive branch. So we may not see any movement on this in the near future. It may take a while. I do think that it's not a bad idea to establish such a branch, to have something that is well-funded and can attract talent and maintain and keep that talent in order to fight off things like the various hacker groups that are constantly poking at vulnerabilities within the United States to find a way to get a foothold. I think it's important to establish a defense against that. And the longer we wait, the harder it will be to do it effectively. So personally, I think it's not a bad idea. I'm not a huge fan of creating more military necessarily, but this is the way the future is going. And with the increase in things like AI use, it's going to be a necessity. And I would rather see us be proactive than reactive. I mean, we're already going to be at least a little reactive, but, you know, we could argue we're proactive. Zoe Schiffer over at Platformer has a great article titled "The Secret List of Twitter VIPs Getting Boosted Over Everyone Else," which obviously reveals how some of Twitter's internal documents show that the platform is being, let's say, inconsistent with how it applies the rules. I'm sure this comes as a massive shock to everyone. All right. So the heart of the matter comes from Elon Musk saying that to hold on to that blue verified check mark that some users have, they're going to have to pony up the $8 a month subscription fee to Twitter Blue. Or actually, it's more than that if you're talking about a brand like a company as opposed to an individual. Elon Musk says that this is really about treating everyone equally, that people shouldn't be elevated over others with that blue check mark. But already that's just a frickin' lie, right? Because if it were about treating everyone equally, either you get rid of the blue check mark entirely, so no one has it, or everybody gets the blue check mark, which is the same thing as nobody having it, but you wouldn't have to pay for it. That's not about treating people equally. You're talking about a paid for version and a non-paid for version. That's not equal. Besides, the blue check mark was never intended to be a status symbol. That's what it turned into. What it was meant to be was a way for Twitter to show that it had verified the identity of that Twitter account and that Twitter could vouch that that account actually did represent the person or brand that it was connected to. So if you saw, I don't know, Nicholas Holt on Twitter and there's a blue check mark, you know, oh, that actually does belong to the actor Nicholas Holt, or probably to his PR personnel who handle his social media accounts. But you would know that that's the official one, and it's not just someone claiming to be that. That was the reason for the verified checkmark. It was to verify the person was who they said they were. But of course, the checkmark did become a sort of social capital kind of thing. Like, people were like, I'm important enough to have a checkmark. And that this somehow raised them in social status above everyone else on Twitter, where social status means really nothing, I would argue. I mean, I say that as someone who got a blue check mark. Anyway, now the new version is weird because what the blue check mark means is that the person's willing to pay a fee to keep that blue check mark. I don't know when that actually comes into play. I haven't even seen a message saying, hey, you're going to need to pay a subscription to keep your blue check mark. It may have come through and I just ignored it because I don't pop on Twitter that much anymore. So it's entirely possible that's just on me, not on Twitter. Anyway, it turns out that this version, the new version that Elon Musk is talking about, is even less fair than what we had heard before, because while he's saying, hey, you're going to have to pay if you want that blue check mark, there are around 35 VIP users of Twitter who not only are secure with their status, they actually get a boost from Twitter. They get higher visibility than everybody else does, so that they appear in more Twitter timelines. Now, it will come as no surprise that Elon Musk is in there. We've talked about in the past how Elon Musk has his Twitter feed boosted above other stuff so that he shows up in more feeds. But others are also on that list, and it ranges from ultra-conservative commentator Ben Shapiro to the progressive politician Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And then there's a few celebrities thrown in there. There's some athletes in there. There's other politicians in there. It's a real Animal Farm situation. You know, all Twitter users are equal, but some are more equal than others. Probably not a big surprise to most of you out there. It wasn't a big surprise to me. But again, just more evidence that things at Twitter are topsy-turvy. And hey, if your account doesn't have that paid-for blue check mark, It sounds like your tweets ain't ever going to show up as a recommended tweet in the For You page of Twitter. So if you go to Twitter, you'll see there's like a For You thing. And the stuff in the For You section is curated for you. It's supposed to be stuff that the algorithm serves to you that you are likely to find interesting or engaging. That's the purpose. Actual practice varies because goodness knows the last time I checked it out, I was like, none of this feels like it's for me, but whatever. So anyway, if you don't have a blue check mark, if you haven't paid that subscription fee, then your tweets aren't going to be showing up in anyone's For You page. So I guess this is an incentive to try and get more people to pay for that check mark so that they get increased visibility on the platform. This change will take effect on April 15th, according to Elon Musk. Not only that, but only the paid for accounts will be able to vote in Twitter polls. Now, Musk says this is to fight off the issue with AI bots, which is funny because I thought his whole plan was to eliminate bots from the platform. I remember distinctly him talking about this in the lead up to him purchasing Twitter, that this was a big part of what his plan was. But I guess now he's saying, nope, you can't do that. It's impossible. So the bots are going to ruin everything like the ding dang polls unless we make it a paid for service. So this could also maybe have something to do with the fact that, you know, a few months ago he ran a poll asking if he should step down from Twitter and the majority voted yes. And then, you know, one of his followers later suggested that maybe only people who are subscribed to Twitter Blue should be able to vote in those kinds of polls. And he was like, huh, interesting. World may never care. I mean, the world may never know. Whatever. CNBC reports that Twitter also applied for a subpoena against GitHub, the collaborative developer platform, because someone using the handle Free Speech Enthusiast shared what appeared to be segments of Twitter's own source code. GitHub complied with the court order and removed the code, so it's no longer up there. Interestingly, Musk himself had previously said he would make the source code for Twitter's recommendation algorithm an open source code in an attempt to suss out if there is any actual bias or preference. You know, there are a lot of allegations that Twitter downplays conservative messaging and prevents it from getting as large an audience as other messages. So making it open source would allow people to comb through the code and see, is there in fact bias there? Also to find any mistakes in the algorithm or a way to create the algorithm so that it is more effective in what it's supposed to do. And the whole idea is that this is going to create better transparency and fairness moving forward. But, you know, it hasn't happened yet. And as we just said, Twitter moved to strike source code off of GitHub, though I don't know necessarily that the source code in question related to the recommendation algorithm, the stuff that was on GitHub. But obviously it should be done on Twitter's own terms. I do believe that. I don't know when we're going to see that code actually become open source. Okay, I've got a few more news stories in the tech world to cover before we wrap this up. So let's take another quick break and we'll be right back. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
The chief technology officer of NVIDIA, a guy named Michael Kagan, recently dismissed cryptocurrencies, saying they don't, quote, bring anything useful for society, end quote. This is according to an article in The Guardian. This is interesting. It was not that long ago that NVIDIA was selling truckloads of GPUs to the crypto mining community. It was really big business, so much so that it actually became very difficult for anyone else to find a new GPU. And if you did find one, chances are the price was marked up so high that it would be difficult to justify buying one. The aftermarket on these things was insane. You had people either buying them up to use as crypto mining rigs, or buying them up and then selling them at an insane markup to gamers. But then Ethereum, the cryptocurrency that had fueled this GPU frenzy, finally made the transition from proof of work to proof of stake operations. So with proof of work, you need a lot of computing processing power to be a successful miner in the system and to be awarded new crypto tokens by participating in that system. But with proof of stake, you just have to have a big old pile of crypto coins already, and then you stake some portion of those crypto coins in the system, and the more you stake, the more likely you are going to make even more money. Well, once it made that transition, you suddenly didn't need all those GPUs to just churn away at all hours of day and night. So really, overnight, the demand for GPUs plummeted because now crypto miners had no use for them. And not every crypto coin has moved off of proof of work. There are cryptocurrencies out there that still depend on proof of work, like Bitcoin being the big one. But Bitcoin is such a big fish that GPUs don't have enough output. Their processing power is nowhere close to being competitive for Bitcoin mining. So you wouldn't buy a GPU if you wanted to try and be a Bitcoin miner. And then for smaller crypto tokens, you know, less valuable ones, GPUs are overkill because you'd spend more on electricity bills than you would make through mining. So it doesn't make sense to use GPUs for that. So in other words, what I'm saying is it sounds like a little bit of suspicious timing for Kagan to say that cryptocurrency offers nothing useful to society. It certainly offers nothing really useful for NVIDIA right now. But like, why are you saying it's nothing useful to society at this point? Now, I don't mean to say that I disagree with him. I actually am, very hard on cryptocurrencies. If you've been listening to the show, you know that. But I do feel like if Ethereum were still proof of work, if it hadn't made that transition, I doubt Kagan would have said this. That's what I'm saying. Maybe he would have. Maybe I'm being too cynical. But it seems to be one of those things where, there's a nasty breakup. One person breaks up with the other, and the other person's like, well, I never loved you anyway. That's kind of what it feels like to me. Maybe I'm being too harsh here. But what does Kagan say is useful to society? Well, that would be AI. And here's a big shock. AI, a lot of those applications lean hard on parallel processing, which happens to be something that GPUs are really good at. So the thing that no longer needs GPUs is useless to society. But the thing that really does need GPUs is going to be super useful. Got it. Doesn't seem like there's any bias going on there at all, huh? Reuters reports that the United States Commodity Futures Trading Commission, or CFTC, has sued Binance, the world's largest cryptocurrency exchange. They also sued Binance's founder, Changpeng Zhao, aka CZ. According to Reuters, the charge is that Binance illegally, quote, offered and executed commodity derivatives transactions on behalf of U.S. persons, end quote. Essentially, the CFTC says that Binance was operating in such a way as to avoid compliance with U.S. laws, securities laws in particular. And Binance says that it has worked hard to make sure that it doesn't have U.S. users on its platform. So even if it were doing the things that the CFTC says it's doing, it doesn't apply because it didn't involve any U.S. transactions in the first place. There is a U.S.-based version of Binance, and the relationship between that entity and the main Binance is, it's kind of like one of those Facebook relationship statuses, you know. It's complicated. CNBC reports that the giant Chinese e-commerce company Alibaba is splitting into six business groups, and that these groups, with the exception of one of them, could potentially spin off to become their own independent company. Each group will have its own CEO and its own board of directors, and the groups include a cloud intelligence group, which current Alibaba CEO Daniel Zhang will oversee, a Taobao Tmall Commerce Group, which will focus on online shopping platforms. This one will continue to operate as a subsidiary of Alibaba, even if the other businesses spin off successfully. There's a smart logistics company or business group, a global digital commerce business group, a digital media and entertainment group, and a local services group. Now, the reason for this is probably due to the fact that Alibaba lost around $600 billion in value over recent months, and so this is an attempt to reorganize and allow each business group to focus on what it does without having to rely on the company as a whole to support each business decision. So we'll see whether or not this ends up having a net positive effect on the company. Lyft is getting a new CEO, according to CNBC. Logan Green, the current CEO and a co-founder of the company, will step down on April 17th. David Risher, who formerly worked at Amazon as an executive, will take over as CEO of Lyft. In addition, another co-founder, John Zimmer, who was serving as president of Lyft, will be stepping down. And the chairman of the board, Sean Agarwal, will step down as chairman, but will remain on the board of directors. Logan Green, the current CEO who's stepping down, will take his place as chairman. So why the change? Well, kind of like Alibaba, Lyft has been in a really rough spot over the last year. Stock prices dropped by around 70% year over year. So my guess is that this is a big reorg push to try and turn the company around and get those share prices up and make stockholders happy. Amazon, meanwhile, failed to get a massive lawsuit thrown out of court last week. A class action lawsuit alleges that Amazon engaged in anti-competitive practices that artificially drove prices higher through other retailers who depend upon the Amazon platform. Namely, that Amazon had a policy that prevents retailers from offering lower prices for goods sold outside of Amazon if they also wanted to sell those products on the Amazon platform. So it's that kind of price fixing is what the argument is here. The judge hearing the arguments rejected Amazon's objections to the case, so it can move forward through the court system. If Amazon ultimately loses this case, it could face damages in the billions of dollars, up to a potential $172 billion. Not that I expect it would ever get to that. I think if Amazon lawyers suspected that they would be unable to win the case, it would go to a settlement. It would shock me if it was otherwise, but still, pretty massive deal there. And finally, we've seen dozens of big companies announce massive layoffs for the past few months, and Disney is no exception. Bob Iger, who quickly returned to Disney to replace Bob Chapek as CEO, and keep in mind, Chapek was Bob Iger's replacement a few years ago, Iger said that Disney would be downsizing to the tune of around 7,000 employees. Now it sounds like the company's metaverse team, which had around 50 people in it, are among those who saw their jobs eliminated. Now, I'm not sure that this is a commentary on the metaverse as a whole. You could see this as Disney looking at something that at best is going to take several years to become a thing and saying, you know what? We need to focus our resources on the here and now, and we can worry about the future once we have stabilized. Or you could look at it as Disney losing confidence that the metaverse is ever going to be anything more than a curiosity. Either way, it really stinks for so many people to get hit with job cuts. When it's happening across so many companies, particularly in the tech sector, you really start to worry for folks and hope that they can find a job that makes good use of their skills and their knowledge and experience. Plus, you know, it would be nice if it was a job that they also liked. I guess, you know, you can't ask for too much, I suppose. But yeah, I don't know if this means that the metaverse is on hold. I suspect that what we're seeing right now means that it's going to take even longer for whatever the metaverse is going to be for it to emerge. And it may end up having a big effect on how the metaverse emerges. It may mean that we get a very different kind of metaverse at some point in the future than we would if the economy hadn't gone into this economic uncertainty that we're in right now. So hard to say. I know, again, just like cryptocurrency, I've been very skeptical about the metaverse, but that's largely because I see it as this poorly defined concept that a lot of companies are trying to rush into to either claim a space in when there's no real space there, or they're doing their darndest to be the entity that defines what the metaverse is, which rarely ends up benefiting everybody. It largely benefits whoever, you know, planted their flag in the first place. So I'm still very skeptical about the whole thing. Also, I'm getting older. Like, we got to establish that every time, right? I'm getting older, and as a person who's getting older, I'm running into the risk of being unable to see the potential benefits of emerging technologies. So I fully admit that. That's entirely possible. It could very well be that, you know, in 20 years' time, everyone will be looking back on the metaverse as being the truly revolutionary wave that transformed the world for the better, and everybody's super happy about it, and I'll just be the grouchy old man in the shed in the woods who yells at passing clouds. Entirely possible, I admit it. All right, that's it for this episode of Tech Stuff. Hope you are all well. If you would like to reach out to me, do so on Twitter. The handle for the show is TechStuffHSW. Believe it, even though there's no blue check mark next to it, that's the brand for the show. Or you can download the iHeartRadio app. It's free to download. It's free to use. Navigate over to Tech Stuff by putting that into the little search field. It'll take you to the Tech Stuff page. You'll see there's a little microphone icon there. If you click on that, you can leave me a voice message up to 30 seconds in length. Let me know what you would like to hear. And I'll talk to you again really soon. Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.